So maybe that's not exactly what Dawn and the children's workers go through every Sunday downstairs to minister to our kids, but some days it's not far, is it? Any of us who have worked, what? The high school, okay. So sometimes it's okay. So so that yes, is a small picture of what our children's workers go through. How many of you guys remember that song? That if put Jesus in a little white box, okay. Yeah, I didn't grow up in church. Some of you guys know that. So when I first heard that song, I was an adult. And I automatically, like the way I'm wired, I mean, God made me for this job and this type of work. So the way I'm wired, automatically when I hear something that refers to the Bible or a praise song or anything scripture-oriented, I always immediately go to the theological road and automatically start thinking theologically about it. And I was an adult when I first heard that song, and that's how I operate. So I started thinking about, what is this? You know, and now I get it that it's a cute little children's song to help teach children how special Jesus is, and to teach them that what we should do with Jesus is keep him locked in a little box, because that's what we should do. And their version, you took him out and you gave him some loving and then you passed him on to a friend. And the version we learned, it didn't have that addition. I like that addition. It makes me feel a little better about the song. But in our addition, you just pulled him out of the box, you gave him some loving, you put him back in the little white box, right? That, share him with a friend. Okay, well, that's okay. Maybe I learned the wrong one. I was going to the wrong church, I guess. Some of you guys are like, calm down on your theology, man. It's just a kid's song. My problem isn't with it being a kid's song, and it's cute, and it teaches some positive things. My problem is when the lifestyle of Christians of all ages is summed up with that song. Kiss him, put him in a box, keep him in a box. And pull him out every so often. Maybe we'll share him with somebody, but what we keep him in the box. We talked we opened the series up a couple weeks ago about how in these little circles, as we're branching out to our work and school circle, that we can't compartmentalize things. We can't keep Jesus in a box. That's a compartment. We can't do that. And cute song, absolutely, and I'm not jumping on you if you've been teaching to our kids. It's fine, but as Christians, we should understand that part of that song doesn't apply. We should be the same at home or at church as we are at home, as we are at school, and we are at work. We can't compartmentalize. We can't put Jesus in the okay, he's going to be my church box, and this is how I'm going to operate. This is how I'm going to act. This is how I'm going to behave. This is how I'm going to treat other people when I'm at church. And then I've got this different box, and Jesus can sometimes get in my family box, but sometimes I don't want him in my family box because I got some business I need to take care of, and he's probably not going to want to see the way I take care of it. And so we have a separate little compartment there. So sometimes he's welcome, sometimes not. But then over here, we've got this other box that sometimes it's way over here, and it's our work box or our school box. And we don't want Jesus in that box. We are a completely different person when it comes to our work and how we act at work and how we treat people at the work, the words we use at work. And we can't do that. And that's what this series is about, is that big umbrella of that we have to allow Jesus in all these categories if we are captives of him. If we are God's children, we're God's children. If we're at church, we're God's children. If we're at home, we're God's children. If we're at school, Jesus never asked to be kept in a little white box. In fact, he said just the opposite. He said, go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. And that's a very nervous thing for us, that huge word, that big, big, big word that's only two letters long. Go. That word makes Christians nervous. Go, go, therefore go and make disciples. Jesus then defines this process. He says, go and make disciples. Here's what it looks like to make a disciple. Just in case so you're not wondering, it's pretty simple. Go and make disciples. Here's what that consists of. You baptize them. That's an act of commitment, a step of faith, an act of sharing that they believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and they're committing their life to them. So you baptize them you baptize them into Jesus Christ, and then you teach them. You walk with them. You help them to understand all of what Jesus commanded. You baptize them and teach them. That's what it looks like to make a disciple. And Jesus wants to share the gospel with all people. I think a lot of us have read that passage or we hear it taught about, and we have no problem believing that passage. We have no problem supporting that passage. We have no problem amening that passage in church. Therefore, going to all nations. I think most of us here, if not every one of us here, we believe in that famous passage, wholeheartedly agree with it. In fact, we've even given it a name. What's the name of that passage? The Great Commission. We've even given it a name. The Great Commission. Do it to all nations. We think going to all nations means like going to Haiti, like the guys that are in Haiti right now doing some electrical work down there and helping out with the mission. We think, okay, they're doing the Great Commission, but I'm not really doing the Great Commission here because I'm not going to all nations. Or we think of J. Henry and we give him money and he shares the gospel in India. And we think, well, he's going to all nations and I'm kind of a part of that, which we are because we help support him. But we think, okay, that I'm fulfilling the Great Commission by doing that. Guys, this story that was just shared with us by Dave Kelly of this child next door, that's a child next door. You don't have to go to Haiti to find a house without power or electric. And I'm not saying that child is your circle. You have a circle of people that represents all nations. And it doesn't mean you have to go places. Your people around you, the people you work with, the people you go to school with, that's all nations. That's all people. That's God language for go to everyone. Go to all nations, everyone. Let's write this down. Sharing the hope of the gospel is not optional for a Christian. It is expected of us. See, I think most of us here agree with that. Most of us here understand the theology behind that. Oh, yes, of course, Jesus has commissioned us. He's given us a mission with him to go, and he's promised us he'll be with us, to go in all nations and make disciples. We all agree with that. I think we do. I hope we do. But are we practicing it? See, passages about sharing our faith, about sharing the gospel, about sharing our hope, they're not just extra things. They're not just bonus. They're not jimmies on your ice cream. It's not extra. It's not Jesus. You know, it's not like God saying, you know, it'd be nice, you know, sometime down the road if you'd find the time or muster the courage. And yeah, I know you're not a really outgoing person, but, you know, if you'd like to share the story of my son giving his life for humanity, if you could just share that, just if you have the time, if you can muster some courage, you know, only if you feel up to it. That's not how we read that. That's not how we understand it. It's not how we take it. It's not how we would teach it. Sir. Okay, so just so they can, on the recording. So in Australia, they just passed a law. This is coming from Shane, raised his hand. You're going to get to preach in a month. So. Okay, they tried to pass a law in Australia that Christians couldn't share their faith.
Right, because it might offend people. Okay,
because it does offend people. It might offend people, yes. Okay, so it got shut down because in not sharing your faith, you'd be losing your identity as a Christian. Because they couldn't share it.
Right.
Yes.
It's so integral. It's such a part of Christian religion.
For them.
The act of sharing faith is so important that essentially saying.
So they get it. Hillsong's doing a good job then. So no, they get it. And yes, that is like, I think point 3 and 4 today. Well, absolutely. Yes, this is connected. It's not an option. Somewhere I think we've moved that direction. I don't know where we took the wrong turn. I don't know why we take passages like that and think it's optional. I don't know what happened to us, capital C in America. Not just our church, but churches, period. Where we read things, we read the do nots and we understand, okay, we shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be, and even that's starting to slip. But we read those and we think, okay, I shouldn't be doing those. But we read the things where God says, I want you to do this. And we think, that's a good idea for someone else maybe, or someone that's more outgoing, or someone has more of a gift, or someone knows the Bible more, or someone's been a Christian longer. Well, isn't that what we pay the preacher for? You know, that's our mentality. And I don't know what happened or where it went that way. And I'll let you, this is a strong message today. And it's one that I'm not apologetic about. I threw a disclaimer first service, but then between first service and second service, Satan attacked my tablet, so I know this is from the Spirit. But it was a strong message, and when we reread it, I thought, man, I need to soften this up before I bring it to church because it's kind of harsh. And then I was stuck with that dilemma. I was like, all right, if it's for me, maybe I should soften it up. But if it's from the Spirit, I can't soften it up. I can't mess with what he has prepared for us today. So I'm doing my best to stand out of the way and just be a mouthpiece, but this is some heavy stuff this morning. I don't know where we've taken that turn. That we think that when God asks us to do something, it's just a wish that he has for us. Why don't we take that as an expectation? When God says, do this, as his followers, as his Christians, if he is Lord of our life, as we sing to him, shouldn't we look at that and say, okay, he said, do this, I got to do it. But we don't. Some of you might be thinking, well, how do you know we don't? It's just a mathematical deduction. It's an observation mathematically, really. It's just straight logic. It's observable data. Mathematically, if we'd be taking this seriously, go and make disciples, some things would be dramatically different here at our church. If each of us would share the gospel, and not just with one person, because one person's not going to get it. I hope we've all at least tried to share at one time. If you've only tried to share with one person, you know sometimes they reject it, sometimes they accept it. So I'm not saying that everyone goes and shares the gospel with one person. I think that's thinking not great commission. That's thinking kind of poor commission, so-so commission, not even that much. But Jesus says go and share with everybody. This message that's written on your heart that we talked about last week, that message is for everyone that Jesus is writing on your heart with the Spirit, not on stone tablets, not with ink, but on our heart with his Spirit. That message is for everyone. And the core of that message is the gospel message, what has saved us, what has changed us. And we're to go out and share that with everyone. And so when you're sharing that in all of your different conversations, we're going to get some practical side in a minute on that. But when we're sharing that in all our different conversations, different things that we're involved in, then you're sharing not with just one person, but you're sharing with multiple people. And if in that mix of multiple people, if just one person that you're sharing with a year responds to the gospel message and they accept Jesus Christ, then we would have at least 3 baptisms a Sunday here. On a given Sunday, we have about 150 people here. Today, it's a little full, which is awesome. I love seeing that. On a Sunday, a given Sunday, we have about 150 people here. And if just each of us would make one disciple a year, we would double the size of our church in a year. And it's not about church numbers, but that's 150 more people that are going to go to heaven because of our witness, because of the gospel message that has been written on our heart. 156 baptisms if we each reach, or if it were 3 baptisms a week. Each of us reproducing one disciple apiece a year. And right there, I lost some of you. If I didn't regain you from the, you know, ripping on the song earlier, and that was just a nice starting point. But some of you now, you're just completely lost because you're like, I can't do that. I've never done that. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't know. And you're asking me that one disciple a year, that's not realistic. That just can't happen. And let me tell you, it won't happen with that thinking. I had a friend in college that told me, can't, never, could. And I've shared that statement with my kids, and they're still trying to get the concept of that. Can't, never, could. If you say you can't, you're never going to. You're never going to be able to. Jesus was having a conversation with his disciples one day, and he was talking about how difficult it was for a rich person to get into heaven. And that there were so many things that a rich person is attached to, so many things that they hold a value, so many things that are in competition with God in their life. So many things that we're all rich people when you compare us to the rest of the world, but how many things that we've got that we find security in, we don't need God. We've got our money, we've got our house, we've got our car. And so it's very difficult for a rich man to get into heaven. And here's what Jesus said in Matthew 19. Jesus said to his disciples, I tell you the truth, it is very hard for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. I'll say it again. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. That's just crazy talk. I heard about, you know, Abby, your trip recently, Abby and Dina, and, well, you guys, yeah, Stephanie, she was right here earlier. And you guys saw some camels on your, yeah, okay, so it wasn't the girls, just you guys? Okay. So yeah, you saw a camel. It's a big animal. And Jesus is saying it's easier for that animal to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. The disciples were astounded, and they responded appropriately. Then who in the world can be saved? I like the New Living Translation there. Who in the world can be saved then? How is this even possible for anybody? They asked, and Jesus turned it on them. It was just a beautiful moment that needs to hit us fresh and new today. Jesus looked at them intently and said, humanly speaking, it is impossible. Okay, if you're thinking about this through the human mind, if you're thinking about this on earth, then yeah, you're right to say who in the world can be saved. But with God, everything is possible. Jesus is like, of course this isn't going to happen. Of course a camel's not going to get through the eye of a needle. I mean, we can't even get a string to go through the eye of the needle with a ton of slobber and spit all over the end of it, right? It doesn't work. Jesus turns this around and he says, if you're looking at it from a human standpoint, then you're right to ask, who in the world can be saved then? But if you look at it from Jesus' perspective, then everything is possible for God. And this is specific. I mean, he's talking about rich people getting into heaven. When we look at our mission field, I mean, even the poor people in America are rich compared to the rest of the world. Our mission field's not an easy one because of that. But it's possible. With God, everything is possible. We need to change our thinking. Let's write this down because that's super important. We have to get rid of human-based thinking on God-sized matters. Salvation is a God-sized matter. This text specifically, I mean, when he says, through God, everything, you know, sometimes you can say, well, you can take that out of context. This text specifically is talking about rich people going to heaven. And we live in America. It's not taken out of context at all. It is exactly the context for us as Americans to look at this and say, I can't do it. We need to change our thinking because that's human thinking. And we need to change it to God-sized thinking and believe that God can do everything. We need to change that. If we're going to prepare to share at our work, at our school, we have to change that. 156 baptisms a year, and we would be rocking a solid average weekly of 300 plus in just 1 year's time. And that's one person making a disciple out of one other person. With God, everything is possible. We have to change our thinking. But I can't do this at school. I can't do this at work. Get rid of the human-based thinking about God-sized matters. A lot of us don't want things to get weird for us at work or weird for us at school with our friends. Like we've turned into some radical extremist Christian, like something's like way different in our life. You're just being you. And that's in my freshman year of high school. I didn't become a Christian until my senior year of high school. My freshman year, senior year of high school, I was voted most liberal in the senior superlatives. So believe it or not, that's a truth. Out of 200 and some students, they picked me. But my freshman year, I was in the debate club because the girl I was dating was in the debate club. So that's kind of how it goes, right? You just kind of follow along. And there was a thing in debate club that was dramatic, you know, interpretation. So I didn't have to debate. I learned a dramatic piece, and you guys know I can do a little drama. I was following around doing that. And Coach Newell was a debate coach. He was also like the history teacher or whatnot. And he was one of those teachers that was just kind of the cool teacher, you know. You could just sit and talk to him and you could just be you around him. And so I got to know him. He got to know me. And so years passed. And then I became a Christian the very beginning of my senior year, and that aroma of Christ started to spread, but it wasn't quick enough to change things in the senior superlatives. But in that senior year, I had my drama teacher was the same teacher as my, she was also my senior English teacher. And so I spent a lot of time with her. And she had us do a little senior project, and one of our papers we had to write in our English class was where we saw ourselves in 5 years, or where we saw ourselves in 10 years. And I wrote this paper, and it was just all about, you know, I can't wait to see what God's going to do. I'm excited to be part of building his kingdom and investing in his kingdom and seeing lives changed by what I'm going to end up doing wherever he leads me. I kind of feel like it's music, and I, you know, at that time it was. And so I wrote this, and I turned it in, and man, it was heartfelt, and it was everything. And she came back to me a couple of days later, called me up to her desk, actually, and she said, I need you to rewrite this paper. She said, I was asking for something serious. I was asking for something honest. And I was like, I spend a lot of time with you. You know me. This is me. This is honest. She said, well, I was in the teacher's lounge, and I was sharing with the other teachers how great it was, how uplifting it was that students were wanting to invest, that they were wanting to go forward and make the world a better place. And she said, then Coach Newell started giggling in the corner, kind of started laughing under his breath. And she said, what? And he said, oh, that's Dusty. He's pulling your leg. That's not Dusty. That's not him at all. And she said, really? And he said, yeah. Yeah, we went around. He traveled with us to the debate team, whatnot. So, and I said, no. A change happened in my life. Jesus got a hold of me. I wasn't, Coach Newell's right. This wasn't the me he knew, but this is the me now. If Jesus has gotten a part of your heart, if he's gotten a hold of your life, there's been a change. And it doesn't mean that you're some radical extremist. It's who you are. It's who you are now. So when you're worried about sounding weird or sounding like, you don't have to worry about that. Just be who you are. When someone mentions, you know, making disciples of all nations, we get this mental image of doing something crazy, like standing at the front door of school or the front door of our place of work and preaching to people or passing out the Turner Burn pamphlets. Yeah, you know, those kind of, yeah, accept Jesus or you're going to burn in hell. Those are successful. I don't know, anybody here become a Christian because of one of those? Okay, I could be wrong, but I don't think they're really going to do a whole lot. It's really much easier, and it's also much more difficult than that. Last week we talked about what goes into this. What do I smell like? Do I smell like the victory of Jesus? I've been captured by Jesus. That's who I am. That's my identity. We're no longer the captain or the leader or the general in our life. We're being led in a procession, and we are the captives. And we should be spreading the aroma of Christ. We talked about how we are walking resumes of God, that we are validating the work of the ministers in our life, and we are reflecting the impact of the power of the gospel in our life. And that we are letters of Christ, that the Spirit is writing on our hearts a message for who? For a couple people? For everyone. The message he's writing on your heart, if you've got your heart open and you're allowing him to write on your heart, that message is for everyone. Just be the person that you are. Being a person who has been captivated by Jesus, not just at church, not just raising your hands in worship, not just at home when it's prayer time around the table or nighttime prayers, at work, at school, at home, at church, you're a captive of Christ. That's who you are. That's your identity. Being God's walking resume, being Christ's letter at church, at home, at work, and school. Peter says, don't worry or be afraid of their threats. Don't be afraid of the other people. In Peter's time, he was writing to people that were suffering severely. We're worried about embarrassment or maybe even, you know, putting some awkwardness in a friendship or a relationship. Peter's, the people he was writing to, they were worried about dying. And he says, don't be afraid of their threat. So if he's telling them, don't be afraid of them, I think this can be applied to us. Don't be afraid of the people around you. Don't be afraid of the fears you might have. Instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And Shane, this is exactly where we're going. And if someone asks you about your Christian hope, always be ready to explain it. I love in this passage, the NIV and the NAS, the New International Version and New American Standard Version, they each translate this using different words. But it's exciting because all the meanings, normally when you use different words to translate things, it kind of gets a different meaning. All these meanings, they work in harmony with each other. The NIV says, be prepared to give an answer. The NASB says, be ready to give a defense. That kind of takes more of a courtroom type scene to it, but still the idea. We should be prepared to share about the hope we have. In the New Living Translation, it says, worship Christ as Lord of your life. And the NIV translates that phrase that in our hearts that we should revere Christ as Lord. The NASB translates that phrase as we should sanctify Christ, which means to set him apart. We should sanctify Christ as Lord in our hearts. That's the first part of the phrase. Worship God, revere him in your heart, sanctify him in your heart. Actually, I'll put this one over here. That way I can... Well, no, I put it up. That would be correct for you guys. I'll go backwards. So we've got this over here. That's the first part of the phrase. The second part of the phrase says, be prepared or give an answer, be ready to give an answer, or be ready to give a defense for the hope you have. In our Bible, how many of you guys, you're looking at your Bible, is there a period between those two phrases? Yes? I think there is. And we read it and we separate those out. Worship God, and then here's the extra stuff. Be prepared for this, just in case it happens. You know, just in case someone asks you to give an answer for your hope. In the Greek, this is a clause of the first statement. It's connected to it. Here's what you do. Worship Christ. Here's how you worship Christ. You're prepared to give an answer for the hope you have. Revere Christ in your heart, statement one. Clause, here's how you do that. You are ready to give an answer for the hope you have. Set apart Christ as Lord. Sanctify him in your heart. And here's how you do that. Here's how you set apart Christ is you are prepared to give a defense for the hope you have. They're connected. It's a clause to the first statement. Let's write this down. To worship Christ means to be prepared to explain the hope that we have in him. Shane, am I correct? Is this exactly where you're headed? You can't separate them. To worship Christ means to be prepared to share it, to share it. You can't separate the two. To worship Christ means to do this. Now, what's really, really cool is that the inverse works because worshiping Christ empowers us to be able to share. Let's write that down. That's the inverse. We will be able to give a reason for the hope because we worship Christ. The clause is dependent on the first statement. See, a real relationship with Jesus will give us all we need to be able to share the hope we have. A real relationship with Jesus will give us the hope or the ability to share the hope we have. So, preacher, are you saying I don't need to read my Bible because all I need is a real relationship with Jesus and I'll be able to have everything I need to share? Pardon me for assuming, but I would assume a real relationship would involve reading your Bible. Right? I'm not going little. I'm not nitpicking little things. I'm going top shelf. I'm going the first bullet point. I'm going number one, Roman numeral one, if you want to go that far, in an outline format. We're looking at top here. I'm not looking at subpoints. If we have a real relationship with God, then we should be praying to him. That should be part of that. If we have a real relationship with God, we should be in his word studying it. If we have a real relationship with God, then when we worship God, that's going to be real and authentic. We don't just worship God. Anybody can sing the song. Anybody can come in here, read the words, sing the songs, and enjoy the effort of the group. Anybody can do that. But it takes a relationship with Jesus to turn that from just music to worship. It takes a real relationship with God to come and experience church. Otherwise, we're just a group of people getting together and meeting in a building once a week, shaking hands, acting like everything's okay, and then going our separate ways. But if we have a real relationship with Jesus, that completely changes what this place is about, what it feels like when we're here, how we interact with each other. That is the most important thing, is a real relationship there. When I had that change in my life, when before I became a Christian, I went through a real bad depression. I've shared that with some of you guys, or actually most of you that have been here sometime. And it got so bad I wasn't eating or sleeping or anything. I had to quit my job. I had to quit. I was playing drums in an 80s hair band, Poison and Warrant and Motley Crue. So I had to quit the band. I had to quit playing soccer. I had to quit the job I was in. And I just had to focus on sleeping and eating because I wasn't doing either. I'd really just kind of given up. And it was then that I started reading the Bible. It was then I started playing guitar. That's why it's a worshipful instrument for me. I was playing guitar and I was reading my Bible, and that's all I did during a number of months. And in the very beginning of the senior year, my senior year in high school, I gave my life to Christ. It was awesome. September 21st, 1991. And I gave my life to Christ. I was baptized into Christ. And then I went back to the job that I worked at before, a little place called Swenson's down in North Carolina. And these people knew me, and they knew me better than my school people because I worked with them. And I was closer with work people. And they saw this change. I was a brand new Christian. I didn't have any super big study. I wasn't a Bible college student at that time. All I had was my experience with Jesus. All I had was what I had experienced, what he had done in my life. Was I reading the Bible? Absolutely. At that time, I'd only read like two books of the Bible. It was Matthew and Revelation, believe it or not. I jumped right in. But I'd only read a couple books in the Bible, I'd just been a Christian a little bit, but I remember having countless conversations with people after work, and they'd be smoking a cigarette, and I'd be eating ice cream. I was skinny then, I could afford it. And we'd be talking about the Bible. Some of them were college students, they were working there, and some of the waiters, the waitresses, we'd chill after work. Sometimes we'd have a little table where the people. I wasn't gifted at this at that time. I wasn't a scholar. They knew who I was. They saw a change, and they were curious. What happened? I mean, it's not bad, but what's up? Big deal. See, when we worship Christ, when that relationship is real, it's not going to be a problem to share. Verses like go and make disciples, that won't scare us anymore. That won't make us nervous. Because it's just what we do. Because it's who we are. First John, and John opens his first letter up with this. I love this little passage. He says, from the very first day we were there, taking it all in. I'm reading from the Message. I like the way the Message translates this. We heard it with our own ears, saw it with our own eyes, verified it with our own hands. So John's like, man, we saw Jesus. We touched him. We heard his voice. The word of life appeared right before our eyes. And I can just imagine one of those times when Jesus appeared with him. The one time when Thomas wasn't there and the other time when Thomas was there. And Jesus is like, hey, touch my side. Look at this. It's real. And yeah, that was for Thomas. But man, I'm sure everyone else in that room was benefiting from that moment. And John's saying it right here. He's like, man, we saw it. We touched him. We heard his voice. The word of life appeared right before our eyes. We saw it happen. And now we're telling you in a most sober prose that what we witnessed was incredibly this. The infinite life of God himself took shape before us. We saw it. We heard it. And now we're telling you. Here it is. Here's what I experienced. I love the way this is an outline. And it's so easy to follow. Here's what I experienced, John says. Here's what I experienced. Here was my experience with Jesus. And I want to share it with you. And now we're telling you so you can what? Experience it along with us. If we're Christians and we really have bought into this thing and we really believe the things that we were singing, the things we're reading, that Jesus died for our sins, that I gave my life to him, that's an experience we should want to share with everybody. And it shouldn't be awkward. It shouldn't be radical. It shouldn't be weird because it's just who we are. This happened to me in my life, and I just want to share it with you because I want you to experience it with me. How does that change your outlook on what sharing Christ means? So that you can experience it along with us, this experience of communion with the Father and his Son, Jesus Christ. Our motive for writing is simply this. We want you to enjoy this too. Your joy will double our joy. Let's write this down. We simply share. We simply share what we experience in our relationship with Jesus. Prepare to share. That's how you do it. Jesus expects us to be spreading the great news of the gospel everywhere to all nations, sharing our hope at work and at school. It's not optional for the Christian. It is the expectation of us as God's children. We have to get rid of human-sized thinking on this matter, on any matter really, but on this matter specifically today, we need to get rid of human-based thinking on God-sized matters, especially when it comes to sharing the gospel, when it comes to salvation. Share with everyone the hope you have. Share with everyone you come into contact with. May it be that no one is in your life that doesn't know that you love Jesus and are in love with him and are excited about what he's done to you and for you and with you and in you and around you. And just keep going with prepositions. A part of our worship to Christ is sharing the hope we have. That's worship. Being able to give an answer for our hope. And yet the inverse is true, that we are able to share because of the real, authentic worship, because of this lifestyle pattern of worshiping Christ. And that relationship with Jesus is what gives us the personal things to share. I hope that your experience with Jesus wasn't just your baptism date. That would be a very sad thing. Every one of us who are in a relationship with Jesus, we should have experience after experience after experience after experience. And what that does is every time you have an experience in a different category, in a different road, in a different situation, different circumstance, at a different age, with a different thing going on, or a different something, or a different this, or a different that, it gives you more and more and more experiences to share whatever the conversation is around you. If someone's talking to you and they're saying this and this, I was just having a conversation with a friend the other day, and it popped out a few times. I was like, you know what, we went on this subject, and I was like, you know, I was talking with God about this, and here's what I was kind of thinking. I feel like God was working with me, and we were kind of working this out, and then we kind of talked about something. We came across another subject, and I was like, you know, I was talking with God about that the other day. I was just driving along, and we were talking. And if you're with God in a relationship, you're going to have those moments. And the more of those moments you have, the more avenues you have to include that in your conversation and to season your conversation with salt. That was a scripture I left out today. Be prepared to share at work, at school, everywhere you go.